This is Reggie and ATL coming to you live from the lovely city of Atlanta, Georgia. And today we got a special guest. We're going remote to Doug Hess in Indiana. Doug, how's it going?
I'm doing well. Reggie, how are you?
Can't complain. And you know, Doug, initially when I was thinking about this show and what the show we were going to do today, this was not the plan. You know, I do this show with my friend Nick, and I was thinking I would really love to talk about politics more. I think I'm driving Nick crazy talking about politics. And I love talking about it all the time. I'll talk about it a lot. And I guess because, you know, when it comes to politics, with some people, Doug, it's a situation where their identity is very closely tied to it, you know? So I feel like it's harder for them to have conversations about politics in general. Do in your area or with your friends and family, does anybody like talking about politics, understanding how crazy the time is we're in, you know?
No, I think you really hit the nail on the head when you said that. I think everybody, a lot of people have their own ideas of politics. I think there are some people that like to be in your face, whether it's on the right or on the left. But I would probably argue and say that there's a lot of people that have a belief one way or the other. Mm-hmm. But they want to keep it to themselves, especially in today's environment, because no matter what you say, somebody's going to criticize you for it, you know? And everybody's, you know, says we're entitled to our opinions, but do we really mean that?
If your opinion agrees with my opinion, you're entitled to it. But if it doesn't, then I hate it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I know for myself, I love talking about politics just like you do, but I find myself being a little bit more conservative. And I mean that from a topic standpoint. Mm-hmm. Because I think, you know, people are like, do I really want to start a debate or a fight or an argument with friends that I've been friends with for years? And at the end of the day, does it really matter which way they vote? We're afraid to speak our minds to our friends because we're afraid we're going to get criticized. And I'm talking about on either side, not just one way or the other.
Right. Right. And I see that happening time and time again. And as we get closer and closer to the election, I'm wanting to have more and more of these conversations because for a politics nerd like me, I feel very conflicted about this time period. OK, Doug, because when you look at the last 4 years for a politics nerd like me, they've been amazing. It's been an amazing 4 years because you don't get stuff like this in politics. Like this thing that's just been going on since 2016, really 2015. Since Trump really got in the game legitimately, things have been different. This is not the run of the mill politics. This is not the run of the mill political environment that we're in now. So I have been guiltily, or I would say guilty of being very happy about a lot of the dysfunction because it's just interesting to watch. That being said, it takes a different turn, I guess, when you come into 2020, Doug, with the coronavirus and people are actually like dying. You know, it's like it's a lot heavier.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like, you know, and I feel very guilty about that.
Yeah, I would even go a step further and say it's not just with the coronavirus and people getting sick and potentially dying. But I'd also say that it's the economy with mom and pop shops closing left and right.
For sure.
I know here in Indiana, that just last night, I saw on Facebook where several Pizza Huts have been closing and because of the coronavirus. And I stopped there and think and go, Pizza Hut? How does a name like Pizza Hut just go out of business? And we're starting to see, or at least I am starting to see more and more of some of those named restaurants kind of go out of business because of COVID. And so I would argue not only is it COVID, but I also think it's starting to, we're seeing the effect on the economy, not necessarily Wall Street.
For sure.
Because I think with Wall Street, we're seeing record highs. And I think the stock market was up, what, 600, 400 points today? I don't know.
It's been on rapid fluctuations the last couple of days, but up very big on the year and up, especially relative to the crisis, Doug. Up relative, you don't see the stock market usually rising on a crisis like it did on this time.
But my question would be, if Wall Street's doing great, is Main Street really doing well?
Seems to be a disconnect there.
That would really be, that would be a question I would have for the group, bigger group is, we're seeing it in one area, but are we really seeing it where it counts, where me and you are probably more affected, and that would be on Main Street instead of Wall Street? Now, I could argue on Wall Street we're being affected because of our 401k, et cetera, et cetera. But we're not the wheeler and dealer, so at least I'm not. Maybe you are.
No, I wish.
Me too, right? But so I think we're being affected in a different way.
So do you think, now that we're getting down the stretch here, and we'll definitely you heard the news that came out of the Bob Woodward news that came out about Trump and Bob Woodward's book that he has a new book that he wrote. And this is the news as of today. This is why we had to do this show. I'm like, when this news breaks, I felt like I had to at least talk about it in some sense. With Donald Trump, the book, I'm not sure if you're familiar, Doug, but there's a new article out with Bob Woodward's new book where he has Donald Trump on tape back in February saying he did know how lethal or how contagious, even if he wasn't talking about lethal, how lethal it is, even though it does seem like he touched on that as well when comparing it to the everyday flu. But it seems like Trump knew some of these things earlier on and was saying something very different, you know, at his rallies and such. Now, we both know. Sure. Some of this is just politics as usual, Doug. You know, some of this is just this is just what happens. You got caught. Right. At the same time, he was so nailing that point home. I felt like it was a high risk, high reward, because if it had gone away very quickly, I felt like Trump would have rocketed towards reelection. Like if he was right about that and, right. and it went away in like March, April or so, he would have crushed it. I think it would have been very hard to beat him. But with all this stuff coming out, do you think there's just a fatigue of information? Do you feel like stuff like this really even matters anymore?
I would say yes and no. I think it matters to some. And I think what's great is Labor Day's over and both conventions are over. So now we're getting into the heart of politics. And, right. you know, what, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, we're getting ready to be in October. Mm-hmm. The question becomes, what's the October surprise that we're going to see in the next 3 weeks, et cetera, et cetera. I think to some degree, people are not even starting to pay attention. I mean, you're going to have your hardcore right and your hardcore left that's paying attention no matter what happens.
Right, exactly.
Guy trips and fall, people are going to know about it. And I would say probably you and I are in that category.
Right, for sure.
Correct? You know, just because we like it. I would argue, I still think probably 80% of the people maybe have an idea which way they're going to vote. But I would say a lot of people are still probably up in the air, and there's a lot of that fatigue where they're tired of it. And my guess is probably within the first debate, which I think is in, 2 weeks?
Yeah, it's pretty close.
That's when you're going to – yeah, I think that's when you're going to start seeing people get more engaged. I say more engaged because it seems like every time I log on to social media, people are engaged. But I think that's when
– maybe it's the volume of people, Doug. Like maybe there's more people still engaging. They're just going to add to the pre-existing people that are engaging. That's
but
hilarious.
I really think it's going to be – I think it's really going to be now that Labor Day's over, people are going to start looking at that. I think the stock market's going to play into that. But also, I think that first debate is when we're going to start to see the debate really ramp up.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that that's very important for Biden, in my opinion, only due to the fact, Doug, is that I this is an arbitrary percentage, for sure. But let's just say 30%, okay? Sure. Trump has 30% that'll run through the wall for the guy. They right. he's bringing a pre-existing audience or voters with him, so to speak, because I call him an audience because when he's doing his press conferences or his rallies, sometimes it seems like he's just going through routine up there. You know, they're eating it up. But his voters, he's going to bring voters with him. You know, they'll run through the wall to vote with the guy. And Joe Biden's going to have voters who will run through the wall to vote against the guy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep.
How do you get separation there? And I feel like this separation is going to be more important on Joe Biden's side, especially since the right has put a lot of eggs into the Joe Biden's an idiot basket. And I don't I don't know if that is a prudent strategy, being that there will be a head to head debate, because if Joe Biden does good in the head to head debate, it's going to seem like all that stuff is wasn't really warranted.
Right. No, I would agree with you. But I also think, and I'm not saying this is good or bad, mm-hmm. but I think Trump is somebody that is one of those calculated individuals he's looking at the odds, playing the odds. You know, I'll be honest with you. Let me say it this way. Every politician, and I'm sure even we could say about you or me, if we're on tape enough, we're going to say something that we don't mean.
Absolutely.
Or we're going to trip up.
Yes.
Some of that is especially when you get into a campaign like that and it's fatigue and somebody's been talking for 2 or 3 days and they don't even know what state they're in or what county.
Some of that it happens to musicians themselves when they're on tours.
Yeah.
They shout out the wrong city when they're on somebody's tour sometimes because they just have so much fatigue from traveling and stuff like that, you know?
Right, absolutely. And so does that really make them an idiot? No, they're wore out. So we can chalk some of that up to just good old fashioned tired,
right?
In terms of that. But I think, and I could be wrong here, I think some of the strategy is going to be kind of like poke the bear. And I think Trump is going to be very aggressive in this first debate.
For sure.
I don't know that. That's just my opinion.
I would see why he would try to get Biden to say something dumb.
Yeah, because I would argue that Biden probably has a more of a history.
Not that
Trump hasn't said his fair share.
Yes.
But I think there's a little bit of a strategy to get. It's kind of like a boxing match, you know, where you try to get a couple of good blows in to get the guy off balance and then you can go in for the kill. If I can use that analogy, that's what I think Trump is going to do in the first debate. Do I know that for a fact? No, I could be wrong. But that's where I'd be putting my money on.
Who do you think is more important? The first debate is more important for?
I think it's for Biden, to be honest with you. And I'll tell you why, because we haven't seen Biden as much. You know, I know the Trump side says he's hiding in his basement in Delaware
for
and
sure.
We hear all that.
And then
rambling
it's popular,
stuff,
popular thing to say. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. So I think it's, in my opinion, it's more important for Biden to come out and say, I'm here, I'm ready. I can take this guy head to head on. So my thought would be it's more important for Biden to have a good first debate than it is for Trump. Obviously, both want to have a great debate. Don't get me wrong. But if I'm putting my money on somebody, I'm thinking it's Biden just because as president, and I would say the other flip it, if it's the other way around and Biden was president, anytime the president goes outside, he's on TV.
Yeah.
So you're getting that automatic exposure.
Free media, my friend. Free media.
Absolutely. Compared to Biden, where, yes, he's a contender for the president, but I would argue he has to work maybe just a little bit harder. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's, for one, Doug, it's hard to beat an incumbent in general. An incumbents come in with an advantage, even one if you might be as disliked as Donald Trump. They come in with advantages.
Absolutely. The power of the presidency, as they say.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a situation where I was talking to a friend of mine earlier and he's a conservative. And I was telling him how I just felt bad after the Woodward stuff came out. I sent him a text message and I told him that I felt bad that my conservative friends didn't really get choice. Like, this is, if you're conservative, this is what you got to do. You don't have another choice. Like, you got to roll with the Trump train because this is it. This is it. There's not going to be any challengers, and he's very popular in the conservative party. So it's kind of like if you're going to choose to be a conservative this day and age, you're going to have to vote for the guy. And I told him that I it kind of sucks because all this stuff's coming out. I know he doesn't support necessarily Trump himself. You know, there's a big difference between a Trump supporter and a conservative.
Right.
He's conservative more so than he is Trump supporter, but still will vote for the guy. And I was telling him, and he's like, he's getting kind of frustrated. And he's like, you know, I just want somebody to bring us together. And I told him, like, well, Trump, if he wins another 4 years, you can kiss that goodbye. This guy is absolutely the most hated president I've ever seen. And I cannot I didn't think it was going to be this bad as far as the polarization, Doug, because, of course, polarization is there. It's there in every administration.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But this last few years is kind of how we were even talking, how you don't even want to talk about politics out loud in public because of how angry and upset people would get towards it. And this is just not, that wasn't the environment in other administrations that I've seen. Do you think there's any way, Doug, any way that Donald Trump wins the presidency and we have a more united country afterwards?
Honestly, no. I mean, I think we all hope so, because we all want America to succeed. We want to have prosperous country. But to be honest with you, doesn't matter who wins. I think we're going to have a division in this country. And I don't say that as a fan of the idea. I'm just giving you what I think is going to happen. Mm-hmm. Not that I like it. Not that I love it. I hope I'm wrong. Nothing would make me happier than to be wrong on that. But I really just see this coming down to whoever wins, the other side is going to say that it was stolen, it was rigged, it was whatever, insert word here.
Right.
And we're going to have a division no matter what.
So and we like get around to January 20th, you know, so the presidency ends altogether, you know, and unless you want to see President Pelosi taking over here, then I think it behooves the country to get something done at least before that date comes up. You know, I'd imagine that during the corona times and COVID times, it's not crazy to me, Doug, that we would have a abnormal election, because the whole year is abnormal.
Sure.
Like everything is abnormal in the year. So it's not crazy to me. Why would this be completely normal? Exactly. So that's not crazy to me. Of course, if it goes for months, you know, I do think that if Biden was to win, I definitely think you have the 30% Trumpers who are going to hate him anyway. And then I think that there's more of a chance of unity with Biden than Trump, only because of how hated Trump is. And in the sense that people like the Democrats, as far as that, anybody that sends a representative, Doug, to Congress or something like that, let's say you send a senator or a representative, those senators and those Democratic senators and representatives, their constituents demand that they also make things very hard on Trump. They demand it. They don't want to see nothing. They don't want to see you shake this guy's hand. They don't want to see they demand that you hate the guy. And so that means they're not necessary. They're kind of, if you're a Democrat at that point, you're kind of playing with house money. You can do and say whatever, as long as you're not doing anything that's looked at as giving Trump a win somewhere. You're probably going to come off better with your constituents than you would if you just have kumbaya. You just go in and decide, hey, we're just going to get it all together and bring everything together. I do think that there's also going to be that's a general partisan divide there. Right. And that's going to be magnified this year. That's going to be magnified, like as it has been seemingly the last 4 years. So I don't know if how many of those people kind of go to those each side, because, you know, usually we have this division, Doug, throughout the election years. And then once we get down to it and we get to the inauguration, it's kind of all good. Now, of course, you have people that are on their side or in their respective corners, but it seems to get better. This seems like all bets are off.
I think you're spot on, and you know, that's what we want. You know, when we're inauguration of a new president, we want the world to see us as peaceful transforming of power from one party to the other, or from one person to the other.
Absolutely.
Even within your own party. I mean, we saw that in 2016, where it kind of got off to a bad foot, where, you know, in my opinion, Trump was arguing who had a bigger crowd, him or Obama, 2008 versus, right? Remember that?
Yeah, I do remember.
So you sit there and you go, me, I kind of scratched my head going, what's going on here? But, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think it really mess with his support, with his base.
No, I don't know if anything does, though, Doug. I don't think anything does.
Yeah, it's almost like it makes him stronger. Like
it does.
You know,
it does.
It's
more emboldened, because people are tired of being ridiculed for supporting the guy. And I think that, like with anybody that's ridiculed constantly, you go into your corner, and then you go into your corner with other people that are in your corner that have also been ridiculed, and now it becomes a giant echo chamber. And now everybody's hardened. You know, and they're hostile to the other side. It's not like they're just not listening to the other side. Now they're hostile to the other side altogether. I feel like this is something that, unfortunately, if you're Trump supporters, unfortunately, is something that goes hand in hand only due to the fact that the things that Donald Trump says. And it sucks, because with some conservatives, they're like, he doesn't speak for me altogether. I like some of the stuff he says. Right. Some of the stuff he says resonates with me, but he's not speaking for me 100%. But it's kind of like, from the outside looking in, Doug, if you're buying the Donald Trump situation. You got to buy the whole suit. You got to buy the jacket. You got to buy the pants. You got to buy the belt.
The hair.
You're buying the whole thing, Doug. And it's kind of like, it's unfortunate. You know, it's an unfortunate, something I don't think happens to Democrats, but I think that Donald Trump has caused that to a certain degree. And that's one of the reasons he's so popular.
Yeah, which is amazing, which at first thought or at first glance, if you will, it would almost come across as, well, that would be a negative. But for some weird reason, it's a positive.
It is. I think that's why he gets his diehard support. You know, he gets support that other conservatives don't have. I had a friend of mine who was making he kind of thought it was crazy that the Republicans let Donald Trump take over. And I had to remind him that Donald Trump ran against like 17 other Republicans. He beat all of them.
He did. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, how do they stop that, Doug?
You're right. I mean, and in fairness, and if we're, at least if I'm stepping back and being fair, you got to go and say, to some degree, you got to hand it to the guy and go, he earned it.
He did earn it.
I mean, you don't walk in to an established party, and I mean any party, and basically beat their candidate and 17 others and not walk away with a little bit of maybe an ego. And I would even say from an outsider, you almost have to tip your hat to the individual.
A little bit of respect from a political side. I mean, you gotta be honest. I mean, from a political side, from just a general political nerd side, not speaking about the man himself, it's impressive to see a guy go in and take over a party that doesn't want him there and then end up owning it.
I mean, not too many people can do that. Let's just be honest.
For sure.
If nothing else, you got to tip, like you said, tip your hat and go, impressive. If nothing else, I might not like it, but dang, there's something to be learned from that. If nothing else,
I think it'll be studied from like in political science classes, right? Like you at least gotta take a look at it. How can you not? Here's a guy that nobody wanted in their party. All of the people who said some of the things that are actually happening right now, other conservatives said were going to happen during the primaries. They felt that this was going to happen if he got elected.
Right.
And then it ends up actually happening. And he's still more popular than you. There's nothing you can do about that. So I told my friend and said, you know, end of the day, the guy has a cult of personality. It's kind of gone. It's taken on a different form now with this. He has a certain group of people that will believe him over any other kind of source. He is the source of their information, which is crazy to me, for any person to be your source of information, any single person, you know?
Right. And just to kind of echo what you said, it kind of reminds me of what Reagan said, trust but verify, you know?
For sure.
If my only source is you, and I go, all right, Reggie said something, I want to trust him, but let me go over here and do my own research to verify and go, yep, Reggie's right.
Or, right.
Nah. He's got 80% of the story right, but there's 20% that he, you know, whatever. You skewed a little bit to make it look better for you or make it worse for somebody else.
Do you think it's possible to get out of that with the social media world that we're in, Doug? Because we're in a crazy social media world, man, where you got echo chambers on no matter what the issue. It could be you could be macaroni cheese versus macaroni salad. And now you've gone to your side and people are telling each other to kill each other on social media because they don't like the other's opinions and stuff like that.
Yeah. You didn't have Kraft macaroni and cheese. You had homemade and that's true. Yeah. It's crazy. It really is.
So do you think that being that the social media now aspect is so large and we'll kind of, let me see, we'll touch on it. We got about 6-7 minutes here. We'll wrap it up, but I definitely want to talk a little bit about the Russia situation. But with, do you think with social media being involved and it kind of segues into foreign interference in general, do you feel like elections are just going to be different forever now?
That's a great question. I've been thinking about this because, I would have argued that prior to COVID, probably not. But now with COVID being in the mainstream, I do think it does throw up the red flag a little bit that changes. Because you got both sides, one arguing that for mail-in ballots, the other side saying no. You've got some that says, you know, you can't go and vote in person because it's too dangerous. But yet you see the same people that don't want to vote in person going to the grocery store.
Right.
You
know, and being it's like, out well, in general in their everyday life.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, well, if you can do this, why can't you do that? And to me, that makes a little bit of sense, you know,
for sure.
Can you have a, can you have it both ways? And I would argue no in terms of that. But with COVID, I do think that you're going to see a push from both sides. This is not a Republican or Democrat issue, in my opinion, that you're going to see a push from both sides. But yes, I think you're going to see elections from here on out be a little bit different. Because, you know, I could see, especially with the mail-in ballots, a lot of states have postmark dates on them, right? It says you have to have it postmarked by X. Well, do I think there'll be some lawsuits that say, well, because of COVID or because of this, I couldn't get it in by day X. We're going to have to extend it. To me, that's a slippery slope.
It is.
I don't know if you agree with this or not, but I do think because of this, you're going to see some laws that are already on the books being challenged. It's going to be interesting how the courts interpret those rules.
I think anything absent of a convincing win by one candidate or another, and it seems like numbers right now seeming like that would have to be in Biden's side, because I don't see how Donald Trump gets to 50%. I don't see how it happens. If Donald Trump somehow wins 51%, if he somehow wins the popular vote, Doug, that'll be the most amazing thing ever. It won't be amazing to me if he wins again, although I feel like another Electoral College win by in of itself would be catastrophic, because it'll be two in a row. And the country, I think, would want to examine the Electoral College situation a lot more closely if that was to happen again, especially with this president. But him winning in general is not surprising to me, more so than just if he was to somehow find a way to get 51% of the vote, seeming that he's more unpopular now than he has been. And his unpopularities have been remarkably stable. Like he's been remarkably 47, 48% or so, like almost his entire presidency, with going up and down here or there. So if he somehow wins the popular vote, maybe, you know, who knows? I don't think anything absence of a convincing win will stop litigation from one side or the other. Those lawyers are ready to go, Doug.
Oh, I think lawyers are ready to go on both sides.
They are.
I think
fired up and ready to go.
Yep, absolutely. In terms of that. Now, you made one interesting comment that I get a little nervous when people talk about. Talking about the Electoral College, I know that there's talk about, oh, we don't need the Electoral College and so on and so forth. I will tell you personally, I'm a fan of the Electoral College because I do not want New York, Chicago, California, Dallas decide the election for me.
It'll be like three states. Wouldn't even be that many. I think it'd be Texas, New York, and California. And then maybe you throw a Chicago in there, maybe. So then presidents only got to go to four states. And the rest of us will be ran by these states. And that is a very convincing argument for the Electoral College. I guess it's a matter of what do you replace it? How do you assuage those concerns and still honor one person, a vote, every person's vote counting? Because it definitely can be disenfranchising to have your say, hey, well, because I was in this state in particular, my vote only counted up to a certain point.
Right.
I really feel like every human being should get a vote and have that vote count. But at the same time, I do think that the interests that some farmer in Iowa has would probably be overlooked if we didn't have the Electoral College altogether. Like, you know, I don't know exactly how we get to a point of figuring that kind of stuff out. And we'll do another episode on just that alone, because that's an interesting point. I'll probably do a little bit more research and we can come back and address that. And I want to end on the Russia situation and interference in general. Sure. And the latest Russia thing, because we could do a whole Russia series of episodes.
Right,
it'd be like a whole season of Russia episodes. The latest is, you know, Russia using the nerve poisoning on I can't even pronounce the guy's name. It begins with an N. I can't pronounce his name.
Yeah,
but
they used a nerve agent,
and they've used it before. So this is in Russia's wheelhouse. It's a known thing that they do. And then Donald Trump's like, oh, well, I don't know about the evidence. Even if Russia did not help the guy, it seems like he has a very hard time holding Russia accountable. And from a leader standpoint, and I'm not a Russian citizen, you know, I love the USA, you know, but I feel like Putin is just so much more of a capable leader than Donald Trump is. And I take him seriously as a world leader. Like Putin's the real deal when it comes to world leaders. What do you think that the issue is, if it is, it just, could it be as minor as just want to stick it to the press and never give them the satisfaction of going at Russia? Or do you think there's a really something to it, like where there's some kind of compromise here where he just doesn't want to go at Russia? Where would you feel like that would lie?
Well, it could be a little bit of both. I think there's no doubt. How many times have we heard Trump say, you know, if you've seen him on TV at any of his press conference, he's like, oh, I'd like to thank all of our disinformational people in the back. He's talking about the media, et cetera, et cetera. And so I do think that there's some of the, let me stick it into the media a
sure.
little bit.
Every chance
but
you get.
I also, absolutely. So I, you know, I would probably argue both sides. You know, if we were to have a true discussion with our presidents on both sides, I mean, you live in a glass house, you know, sneeze wrong and it's caught on camera. So I would argue that there's probably a little bit of distrust with the media, maybe a little bit more mm-hmm. with Donald Trump than with past presidents. But I think there's a little bit of that there. So I would say that's part of it. You're talking about Russia. I, you know, if I'm taking the president at his own words, I think there's a little bit of a respect.
Oh, yeah,
that
definitely.
He has for
Putin
for
in general.
Putin. And to me, the way I interpret that, and I could be totally wrong here, is that he likes the respect. He likes that dictatorship. And I don't believe Donald Trump wants to be a dictator as what Putin is, even though I know what the left might say.
Mm-hmm.
I think he believes in America. He understands the Constitution and values that. But he likes that image. He likes that
the strong man image of being total leadership. And he didn't. And also, you know, Trump didn't seem to take too well to President Xi and Putin getting these massive extensions in there. You know, Putin a little less democratic than President Xi, but it's not like China's a democracy anyway. But a little bit of jealousy here.
absolutely. Well, and if we go back to, you know, if we're really being honest and open, we saw that with The Apprentice and some of those, you know, the way he ran his private organization. He can run any way he wants, but he was the man in charge.
Right, for
and
sure.
You were not going to buck him from the system. And he was the one that was going to fire you at the end of each episode of The Apprentice, et cetera. So I think it's a little bit of both, where there's a little bit of admiring of Putin, but I also think it's a little bit of, let me just give the media the middle finger in terms of that. So, to my opinion, I think it's a little bit of both.
Okay.
With Trump.
Okay. Yeah, but I can see definitely the sense of him respecting the strong man, because he seems to right. have that energy for not just Putin, for other dictators across, or strong men, even perceived strong men across the globe. You know, I figure that
right, yeah.
Belarus, the United States would have gotten involved in this in other administrations. Donald Trump administration, I don't see us remotely questioning the results that happened in Belarus. And I feel like we're going to have that leader stay in place there. And it looks like Putin's just getting ready for another 16-year run or something like that. I got to look and see. He's going into like the 30s or something.
Right. Yeah. Which is, you know, unopposed. Everybody voted for him, you know.
So, very hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think anybody that's seriously looking at that realize, or everybody believes it's not a fair system. It's rigged.
And, not at
and,
all.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, anybody in the right mind in terms of that. But, you know, when it comes back to Trump, I see a little bit of both there. You know, I think there's a little respect for Putin, but I also think it's a little bit to, not a little bit. I think it's a lot. He wants to give it to the media because he has to be right. He wants to be right. And I think all of us do to a degree. You know, we feel cheated or wronged. I'm not saying that's a good excuse, but that's kind of how I perceive the man, you know, in terms of that. So.
For sure. And there will be plenty of time, Doug, because we're going to be back on and we'll be discussing much more politics as we get down the stretch here. I can't wait to the next debate. I feel like that's going to be to where we really get started after Labor Day as far as getting into the season.
Yeah.
But, the debate's kind of like the first like punch thrown, so to speak, to piggyback on your boxer analogy. It's the first real match that you're going to see, a direct head to head. And last thought, what do you think about Kamala on the trail so far? She's getting her feet wet a little bit here on the, and she's campaigned before, and she, of course she ran for president herself, but sure. She seems to be having a rather, you know, the right's coming after her, but it seems like they can come after her harder. I don't know. She seems to be having a pretty decent time, at least starting off here. You know, of course she's going to do her head to head with Pence, but she doesn't seem to be struggling at all.
No, I would agree with that. Kind of to go back to the McCain, Sarah Palin incident. Mm-hmm. I don't think she was surprised. She was obviously already in the arena on the presidential level. She ran, so she was not. And I don't care what people say, and this is my own personal opinion, but if you go from a governorship, a lot of people think that, oh, I'm ready for this. But you get up to the big boys. It's kind of like going from AAA to Major League Baseball, right, if I can use that analogy.
Right.
And you think you're in the pros, but you're not in the pros until you get to that level. And so my hat's off to her in the sense that she was already in that arena. She felt very comfortable. I think as time goes on, she's going to play the traditional vice presidential role. And that's going to be the attack dog. I don't mean any disrespect to that. I mean, that's just what
they're supposed to do. That's their job, right? For sure.
Yeah. And I think so far, I haven't seen or heard of any major missteps or mess ups. So I would say coming out of the gate since Labor Day, or a little before Labor Day, 2 weeks ago, in terms of, I would say she's probably, I'd give her an A so far in terms of, if I was judging, giving her a grade, I see an A. You know, she's doing what she needs to be doing, and that's being the attack dog for the Biden campaign. That is the role of a vice president.
Well, it'll be interesting to see, because you know they're going to start turning the heat up on her here soon. So she's been able to enjoy a pretty cushy run, and I feel like the Republicans, they're going to start looking around, and if things aren't working, they're going to start throwing the kitchen sink. They're going to start throwing anything at the wall, Doug, to see what sticks.
Well, I think it's two things. One, I think they give everybody kind of a little bit of a honeymoon to see how they're going to react on the national scale. And I think the Republicans have done that. Two, I think you keep your powder dry until after Labor Day. We're after Labor Day. Now things can start to have fun from a political junkie standpoint, if I can say it that
way. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Doug, I appreciate you taking the time out, coming on, sharing your political thoughts with me, with a fellow political nerd here. I really love talking about it, and I appreciate you taking the time out here.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoy it, and hopefully we can do this again.
For sure. This is Reginate TL. Check us out, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you find your podcast. See you next time.